Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, May 29th, 2018, and you're listening to KBOO Portland Community Sanctuary Solidarity at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM. Our guest today is Christine Hong. She is an expert on South Korea and North Korea and the infinitely vast gulf between the two that's also infinitely small, of course. It's one nation separated by politics. One nation under politics, after all. So Trump before we get into the politics that are on everyone's mind, let's have a bit of weather, which is going to be on everyone's head. Over today, supposedly sunny through the mid-morning, and then be clouding over. Highs around 67 for the daytimes, and this evening more clouds and a low around 48 for tomorrow. Partly sunny with a high around 68, and overnight 51. And again, there's this lingering possibility of showers, though that possibility becomes a little bit stronger around Thursday of this week. That said, we finished up the weather, and now we go galloping off into the unknown. Part of it is maybe unknown, but much of it is certainly a good guess. It appeared that Donald Trump made a gaffe. He walked straight into the trap set for him by Kim Jong-un, which, of course, is once this great summit had been announced, and then Trump proceeded to go and blast the pepper of the world with the prediction that he was going to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Of course, this is extremely insulting to anybody, but in particularly Kim Jong-un, and certainly it's not part of this is not Korean diplomacy or good manners. Donald Trump, of course, has neither manners nor diplomacy, and so his actions, his behavior, this braying of how great he was offensive, as it would be to anyone. When he began to realize that something was amiss in the negotiations, then it became a chicken race, both of the guessing who would pull out of the deal first, and Donald Trump, thinking he was such a clever boy, canceled. And of course, he ultimately made himself look like the fool that he is. I don't know whether you can say Jack on the air, but you take my meaning. Though the negotiations are so delicate that it's very difficult to understand what goes on behind the scenes, or for that matter, in the calculations of all concerned. For that, we invite Christine Hong to join us once again to talk a little bit about what is going on. Moon Jae-in, of course, the South Korean president, proves himself time and again to be a sane, balancing, extremely intelligent and voice. We wonder how much influence he has in regards to these two, this historic meeting. Good morning, Christine.
Oh, good morning, Chris.
Well, thank you so much. You must be a very busy person these days.
Yeah.
I can imagine it. Maybe I can't. So Moon Jae-in has influence. There's a difference, I guess, between power and influence. Power being, you know, a heavy iron ball swung on a chain. We're not sure what it's going to hit. What influence does South Korea have on this meeting? And in the end, will they say anything? My guess is that Kim Jong-un has been briefed that Donald Trump is extremely erratic and can be irrationally and ridiculously rude, a schoolboy, and to take, pay no attention. How do you see this situation? How would you sort it?
You know, I think it's interesting that when you compare South Korean and North Korean political philosophies, people describe South Korea as having had a, there's a philosophy called sadaeju, and what it means is the weak's reliance on the strong. And historically, South Korea has been a semi-sovereign country. It still is to this day. You know, basically, with keeping it real, over here. But with regard to South Korea, it still is semi-sovereign. The United States maintains command control over South Korea's military in times of heightened war crisis. It's also the case that the United States stations approximately 30,000 forces on South Korean soil and has historically done so since the middle part of the 20th century. The United States also conducts these outsized, the largest in the world, war exercises with South Korea. And so in many, and according to both mutual defense treaties and status of forces agreements, the United States can use at whim and at will any South Korean military base. So for all of these reasons, South Korea is truly semi-sovereign. So Moon Jae-in, as you were rightly noting, has to play a very sort of difficult role of trying to exercise whatever influence he can in this particular situation. By contrast, North Korea's historic philosophy is juche, which is basically a kind of self-reliance doctrine. So these are two very different positions with regard to the historical trajectories of the Koreas. You know, in your opening statements, you were mentioning that people are clamoring for Donald Trump to get the Nobel Prize, his supporters are. And I was recently in New York, and I heard Noam Chomsky speak, and he said that Trump's policies, although they may superficially seem to be erratic, have a common denominator, and that's me, me, me. And so what we all find ourselves doing, it's not just the leaders of North and South Korea, but everyone in the world is basically trying to do an armchair psychoanalysis of Donald Trump to see whether or not there's a significant enough ego investment in whatever policy he may or may not espouse for him to actually follow through on it. And, I was reminded by the comments of the Korean War historian Bruce Cummings, who was actually posed the question about whether or not Donald Trump should get the Nobel Prize for being supportive of the peace regime on the Korean Peninsula. And what Bruce Cummings stated was that this would be akin to Henry Kissinger getting the Nobel Peace Prize for, supposedly brokering peace with Vietnam.
But it was Kim Jong-un who suggested the meeting in the first place. So Donald Trump, this was simply an unexpected gift from heaven that landed in his lap. He's just attempting to play through without much. I don't see much understanding even of the significance of this. And of course, Donald Trump was the one who started the talk about the Nobel Prize in the first place, man. Others, simply the toadies, just followed through. But really, Trump is seeing himself as far more important than he really is or has been in this whole process.
The sad thing to say is if loose talk about Donald Trump being nominated for the Nobel Prize actually sort of puts gusts of wind under his wings, so much the better, really. If in the interim that kind of loose talk actually brings him to the negotiating table, it will be to the benefit of all.
How much influence, really, does Trump have? I think looks like people are, people, those who are knowledgeable and do have some influence here, and as far as, you know, in the balance of power and the classic balance of power in geopolitics, Donald Trump has made himself virtually he's not considered, it looks like, a serious player, and it's others around him who are really the ones who have come to the table.
I guess this is what I'd say, is that, you know, on the one hand, we have the absolutely grotesque comments that Donald Trump made all throughout last year, basically threatening North Korea with genocide. Mm-hmm. I mean, he said before the United Nations that he would be willing to totally destroy North Korea, and human rights specialists understood that to be a declaration of intention, which is crucial for understanding the legal definition of genocide. So, you know, like, what would he win the Nobel Prize for not being a genocidaire? There's something kind of, insane about even contemplating. The question is, does Donald Trump even understand not just what denuclearization means, but does he truly understand the other key component of any discussions with North Korea, which is what peace means? And so that is another crucial question. But this is the thing that I would say. The fact of the matter is that Donald Trump has an ego investment in reversing his predecessor's policies. The fact of the matter is that when it comes to the Asia-Pacific region, Barack Obama's policies were hardline, heavily militarized policies. He and Hillary Clinton pounded out a blueprint for the Asia-Pacific region, which was called the Pivot Agreement, and it involved the relocation of U.S. naval resources so that the greater balance, would be in the Pacific versus the Atlantic. And it involved really the forward deployment of the U.S. war machine throughout the entire Asia-Pacific region, which Hillary Clinton described as America's economic future. Mm-hmm. This policy involved, so even though Barack Obama, basically did as he promised in his inaugural address, which was to hold out a hand to those historic U.S. foes that unclenched their fists, namely Iran and Cuba, he never, ever held out a hand to North Korea, even when it unclenched its fist. And in fact, his entire policy was based upon the idea of North Korea. He used North Korea as a pretext to militarize the entire region, and in the process, what did he achieve? The encirclement and containment of China. And so, what's interesting about Donald Trump and his lack of depth of any kind of policy understanding is that even as he scuttled the Iran deal, he has an ego investment in reversing the policy of his predecessor with regard to North Korea. Mm-hmm. He's been basically touting himself as the only person in the U.S. president in the post-Cold War period that has even entertained the prospect of peace with North Korea. And in a way, he's right. And so because he has that superficial ego investment, that has led in part to a U.S. willingness to actually have direct discussion with North Korea. And that is actually a good thing.
Thank you so much for that, Christine. It was wonderful to have you back on the show, and we hope to check in with you as events unfold in the region. Thanks again. My guest, of course, has been Christine Hong. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, May 29, 2018. Judy Fiesel, engineering for us today. Thank you, Judy. And Derek Crooks, of course, is our AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.